from Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the spotlight on abortion rights shines on Illinois today. As promised, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a sweeping abortion access protection bill, but not without protest.
Before signing the Reproductive Health Act into law, the governor stressed that abortion bans endanger women, adding that Illinois will always be a state where women have the right to choose.
Let the word go forth today from this place that if you believe in standing up for women's fundamental rights, Illinois is a beacon of hope in the heart of this nation. We trust women.
However, those opposed to the abortion bill gathered as well to express their concern.
I'll be damned if you tell me that before exiting the miraculous home that is her mother's womb, that she's not a living, breathing human person.
Governor J.B. Pritzker followed through on his promise this week, making Illinois what many consider the most progressive state in the country on reproductive health rights. He signed legislation that deals with abortion and women's health. We'll discuss that issue and more coming up here on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield and a longtime reporter and State House observer. Also with us in our State House studio, we have Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio State House editor. And also joining us this week, a couple of our reporters, Maureen McKinney, someone who's been covering state government for us and following this issue, and another person who has been also following this topic throughout the legislative session, and also a member of that Public Affairs Reporting Program I mentioned, our intern for the last few months, Dana Vollmer. And both of you have been on this issue, and we thank both of you for being with us. Dana, I'm going to start with you, though. The Reproductive Health Act, that's the official name of this legislation. Give us an overview of what this actually does so people have a better feel for what we're talking about with this legislation.
So broadly, what the law does is make it a fundamental right for people to make autonomous decisions about their reproductive health. So that includes things like contraception and sterilization, but what's really become the cornerstone of this legislation is access to abortion. So the intent in the first place was to protect abortion rights by repealing laws that we don't currently enforce, but could go back into effect if the federal courts overturn Roe versus Wade. So that includes things like spousal consent for abortion and criminalizing doctors who perform the procedures. So basically the intent was to get those off the books so that abortion rights are protected in Illinois regardless of what happens at the federal level.
And that was really the linchpin here of what we were talking about. This was going into this session, I think most people thought this was not going to be a topic that that lawmakers dealt with. And probably halfway through the session, it seemed to be stalled out in a subcommittee where a lot of legislation just sets and languishes quite a bit. And suddenly, here it comes, and it's one of the first bills that the governor signs after the session's over. So it had to do more with what was going on, not just here in Illinois, but really more across the country, correct?
Yeah. Actually, Maureen might be a better option to answer that. But what we have been seeing is that red states in the South and also even in neighboring states like Missouri are really cracking down and either eliminating access to abortions or really restricting the scenarios under which you can get the procedure. Illinois has kind of always been known as a safe haven for reproductive health care in the Midwest, and that's just kind of solidified our stance.
Yeah. Kentucky and Indiana, too, adopted really restrictive laws this year, following on the heels of Alabama, where they virtually outlawed abortion. And I think that was really the linchpin that kind of kickstarted the discussion here, was there was really total attention in the South to the issue that really whipped up interest in the advocates who are pro-abortion and the anti-abortion rights activists, too.
Brian, do you think that Governor Pritzker, being as outspoken as he was on this and in support of it, that also played a key role in why it started moving in the legislature? Because if he wasn't going to back it, it didn't seem like probably a lot of folks in the General Assembly, at least some folks, would not have probably voted for it or did not want to see it come for a vote. But his support, from what I could tell, seemed to really help put this over the top.
And that's a story I think we've seen on issue after issue this spring, as compared to years past, certainly. Yes, he said as a candidate that he wanted to make Illinois, and I think you referenced this at the beginning of the show, he wanted to make Illinois, quote, the most progressive state in the country when it comes to abortion rights and access. And we've seen that, you know, he, by being willing to put his name on this, it certainly gives cover to Democrats who might be more nervous about supporting this. Now, the Democratic Party has been on the decline in southern Illinois and the more conservative parts of the state, where you used to have more Democrats who opposed abortion rights. And even in Chicago, where you had there were a number of strong Catholic legislators who opposed abortion rights. Probably 5-6 years ago now, there was an attempt to push the sort of legislation where you'd require the ultrasound before a woman could access the procedure. And that was pushed by a Democrat from Chicago. But he retired. Others have been voted out of office. The party has gotten stronger in the suburbs, where this issue is more divided, I guess. And maybe, you know, enough Democrats felt they could support this. And this wasn't the sort of thing where you needed the supermajority either. But to your main point, Sean, yes, on this issue, I think the governor, you know, his support speaks a lot. And it's the same reason as we've said in the past, that we saw a gambling expansion package pass this year when it hasn't for many, many sessions before, despite repeated attempts.
And Charlie, of course, we have this big Democratic supermajorities in the state legislature. But as Brian mentioned, this does not always fall along party lines. And historically, that's been the case in Illinois.
Well, our history has been kind of, what would you say, in a sense, almost like a con game, in that right after Roe v. Wade was handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court in the 70s, the Illinois legislature, Republicans and Democrats, would pass very restrictive bills dealing with abortion. The issue had to be addressed because when our old law was stricken by the U.S. Supreme Court, there were no rules, no regulations, no standards, nothing, just a blank slate. And both anti-abortion and pro-choice people realized there's got to be some kind of a regulatory framework. So one was put in place. And then for years, the legislature would dutifully pass all kinds of restrictions, and Brian alluded to some of them. They would go, and a lot of this happened when Jim Thompson was governor. They go to the governor would veto them, they'd go back to the legislature would override the vetoes. The ACLU would go into federal court, challenge it, and the courts would strike down the law. And it was kind of a game in that everybody knew what the routine was, and people could go home and tell their right to life groups, well, we voted for it, and we voted to override, but it was that darn court that did it. And so there was kind of a cover in that sense. And now the tenor has changed, because I think for people who are pro-choice, there's a real concern that as the U.S. Supreme Court has shifted dramatically to the right with President Trump's appointments, Roe v. Wade is in real danger of being overturned. And then you see what happened in the southern states, where they've probably gone further than anybody would ever imagine. And people who are very much for reproductive rights realize that we better do something in Illinois, because if Roe v. Wade is stricken down, all these restrictive laws are still there on the books.
With some of these states next to us, Maureen, that are, you touched on that earlier, some of these states adopting much more conservative views when it comes to abortion legislation, more restrictive legislation. What does that mean for Illinois here? Is this, you know, I've heard people, of course, on the other side of this saying this will be the abortion capital of the Midwest. People will come here to get, is that truly going to happen? Do anybody really be able to talk about that? Or?
I talked to both the House sponsor, Kelly Cassidy, and Melinda Bush, the Senate sponsor, and they had different opinions on that. Kelly Cassidy said, really, Illinois already is a haven because we're surrounded by states that are anti-abortion, red states. And Bush thought, though it's a shame that people in rural areas are going to have to travel, it is going to increase the visits from people out of state.
And that's something, of course, that the opponents to abortion, you know, have used quite often to say, we don't want people, you know, everybody flooding into Illinois to get abortions. But sure enough, then that may be the case of what takes place. Now, Dana, when we use this term, the most progressive legislation, you know, possibly in the country here, why is that the case here in Illinois? What makes this legislation different from maybe even other states that have less restrictive abortion laws?
One of the things I think is really interesting as we look at the coverage of this bill is that you often hear that what we're doing is expanding abortion rights, but supporters of the legislation would say that it's simply just codifying what we're already doing. So abortion was already allowed up to fetal viability, which is generally considered to be 24 weeks, and then after that, you can still have an abortion when it's medically necessary for the life and health of the patient. So that didn't change under this legislation, but the definition of health of a patient does. And that's kind of where opponents said it was a little too broad, because it includes things like emotional health, familial health, and age. It's not entirely clear what that means. It's something that sponsoring State Representative Kelly Cassidy was asked about in committee and on the floor, and it seems to be as long as the doctor decides under the accepted standards of clinical care that an abortion is necessary, it can happen at any phase of the pregnancy.
And I talked to Elizabeth Nash, who follows abortion policy for the Guttmacher Institute, which both supports abortion rights and does research on reproductive rights. And she told me what makes Illinois' law so progressive is that it covers things beyond abortion, like sterilization and contraception and pregnancy care.
And is there more legislation coming beyond this that when it comes to reproductive health, what else is on the horizon?
Yeah, I think the Parental Notification Act was overlooked, probably because there was so much attention on this issue, that would take away the requirement that parents give permission for abortions for people under 18.
Charlie, when I look back, I remember when that was put in place, parental notification before abortion. That seemed to be something that both sides, at least I would say more moderates in the General Assembly, felt was something they could vote for. And it did pass with Democrats and Republicans voting for that. Have we just seen such a shift on this issue through the years that these types of things are going to be revisited and possibly overturned?
Well, I think one of the things that made that possible when it passed years ago was that there was a provision in there that would allow a minor woman who desired an abortion but was in a familial situation that was really harmful to her. For example, as an extreme case, she was pregnant with a child that had been impregnated by her father, and she wasn't going to go to the father and ask for permission. There was a judicial bypass where the person could go before a judge and explain what the circumstances were, why she wasn't able to deal with the family, and get a waiver of that notification. So that provision being part of it, I think, was one of the reasons that helped it to pass. Now, what's going to happen going forward, I don't know. But there's a kind of a move afoot to allow minors to make more decisions about health care if they are mature enough in the eyes of a doctor or in the eyes of a court. And it's not just on reproductive rights. There's also ongoing debate about children of parents who don't believe in vaccinations, allowing minors of a certain age to get the vaccination without the consent of their parents.
And Brian, if they do take this up, that would likely either be in the fall or maybe certainly next spring, right in time for this presidential election and also congressional races that we're going to be seeing around the country. And this issue of abortion and just what is allowed is certainly going to be one of the big key topics of the next election season. It already seems to be that case. Republicans in many across the country are taking a look at this right now as making it an issue.
Yeah, and as our public radio colleague Dave McKinney at WBEZ in Chicago had a story this week about how nationally the Republican Party is looking to turn Illinois' abortion rights law into a weapon to, as they're trying to retake the U.S. House of Representatives. And, you know, they, as these campaigns do, they're encouraging reporters ask so-and-so Democratic candidate where they stand on Illinois' abortion law. I think it's interesting, though, that, you know, as I think Charlie, how did you refer to it earlier? You said there was sort of an agreement that this, you know, one side does one thing, they know it's unconstitutional, and then, you know, they count on the courts to sort of be the backstop for these laws. And that was even true with the judicial bypass to some extent. I mean, it was passed and then it didn't go into force for a decade or more. I don't remember the exact timeline, but I know that it was passed, I think, in the 90s, but it wasn't until the aughts when it finally took effect, because the Illinois Supreme Court had never put in place the rules that were necessary for this judicial bypass. So the entire law was stayed. And then when Chief Justice Bob Thomas was Chief Justice, he's a very religious individual. He was heard interviewed on a suburban Christian radio station talking about how he was, you know, one of his things he was going to do as chief was to push these rules through. And the court did finally, with a significant personnel change from when the law had passed originally, did put the rules through. And that's how that law is now in effect in Illinois. But there are That's sort of a microcosm of the way the legislative political process has not been the way that this country has dealt with the issue of abortion. And there are activists, even on the pro-abortion rights side, who say, you know what, maybe, you know, ultimately, if Roe versus Wade, it's kind of, you know, a shaky precedent. You know, it's one of these things that depends on the sort of interpreting the Constitution and reading things in between the lines of the Constitution. Maybe it would be best if that, you know, it might be terrible for individuals in the short term, as, you know, abortion was, from their standpoint, was less available. But in the long term, if the country really has to wrestle with this through the political process, instead of counting on the courts to do it from above, maybe then you would see a more of a compromise, or a more, you know, of a real resolution that people could buy into, instead of this perennial battle that we have now.
Dana, when we talk about this issue across the country, and I think it was NPR that just had a poll out this week talking about how the majority of Americans feel as though they support keeping Roe versus Wade in place, keeping that ruling in place, but they do want some restrictions on abortion. Is there a point where Illinois may go too far here and go against even what people in what is considered to be a blue state really want on this issue?
Yeah, I think opponents would argue that maybe what we just signed into law is, again, a little too broad. So we're talking about any of these decisions about when a post-viability abortion can take place is between the patient and the doctor, and it is including things like emotional health, familial health, age, which I mentioned earlier. It's kind of unclear to the people that drafted this legislation and to those of us watching exactly what that means. And so I think some of the opponents would argue that they're super subjective. You could come up with a reason to perform an abortion post-viability for, you know, I think Avery Bourne, and really drilled into this idea of familial health being, did you just decide that you already have three kids and three kids is enough? And so for your familial health, we can perform a post-viability abortion. That is not the intent of the bill. And as some of the Democratic lawmakers noted, it's, they said it was offensive to insinuate that a pregnant woman would choose to terminate a pregnancy that far along just because she didn't feel like having the baby, or that a doctor would go ahead and perform that procedure if it wasn't actually necessary. So,
And I think it's also just worth sort of tacking on to that point. When we are talking about these possibilities of abortions very late in a pregnancy, this is a really, really small percentage of the abortions. I'm reading online a statistic that, you know, after the 21st week, it's something like 1.3% of abortions take place that late into a pregnancy. So this is, you know, a lot of the argument and the passion in this debate is talking about a very small, sort of the very edge cases here. And supporters say that people are not making these decisions lightly and certainly not that late in a pregnancy.
And Charlie, I'll ask you that same question. Is there a point where even abortion rights supporters may say states like Illinois are going too far?
I would suspect probably not, in that what Illinois has basically said is that this is a decision that should be between a woman and her doctor, and as Dana said, the doctor following clinical practices, and so it's not going to be done willy-nilly, and it's something that, in essence, the General Assembly is saying, this is a decision, a very personal decision for a woman between her and the doctor, the medical personnel, and politicians really have no business getting engaged, or folks who maybe don't agree with the choice should not be intruding on something so personal.
Well, just a few minutes left here in this week's program. Let me turn to you, Brian, because state workers, at least some of them, got some news that they probably are pretty happy about, and that is that some pay that they are owed from the state of Illinois, it's been in really tied up in the courts for a long period of time here, that money may actually be at least on its way in the next few months. I guess you can fill us in.
Yeah, and I'm relying here on reporting by a friend of the program, Doug Finke at the State Journal Register, who really took a hard look at this issue this week. These are the step increases, sort of the longevity pay raises you get for being in your career in state government. You sort of start out at a lower pay rate, and it's supposed to be that after you put in the time, your pay keeps going up. Well, AFSCME members had been working under a frozen contract for most of almost the past 4 years, since the first year of Governor Rauner's administration, when he really tried to assert some changes to the state contract. One of the things he also did during that time is froze these so-called step increases. And Governor Pritzker came in. He had run as a friend of the working man and said, you know, state workers deserve to be paid in a way that was fair to taxpayers as well. But he vowed early on that they would get their step increases. So again, according to the State Journal Register, there's some 25,000 to 30,000 state employees who are entitled to some back pay. They should be getting that probably by the end of September, although there could be some even additional money after that, because courts have said they are supposed to get some interest on, you know, this money they should have had all during that time. So yet another cost of the strains and impasses and loggerheads that much of state government found itself in during the Rauner administration.
And Brian, of course, the Pritzker administration has apparently struck a deal with the AFSCME regarding a new contract that had been in limbo for a number of years as well. So soon that may be in place, a new contract.
Yeah, that's right. I think we're still waiting for the workers to fully ratify that and be able to get a look at those terms. But I don't think anyone is particularly surprised by this. Again, Governor Pritzker campaigned with strong union support, and we're seeing the consequences of the voters' choice last year.
And just saving a minute or so here at the end, I mentioned at the start of the show, Dana Vollmer has been a public affairs reporting intern for us for the last 6 months here. And Dana, I just wanted to get your thoughts on covering what really was a pretty active legislative session. Was it more than you expected? I wanted to, you know, get that viewpoint of somebody that stepped into this for the first time.
Yeah, I obviously don't have very much to compare it to, and I've heard that previous sessions have been crazy for different reasons, but it was a lot all at once. So, you know, they have months to go through and do all these legislative efforts, but it seems like, at least with the big ticket items, it really came down to the final week, which I think in some ways worked in favor of Governor J.B. Pritzker, and I think in other ways did kind of isolate Republicans who have probably already not been feeling very heard. So it was an interesting process, and just happy to have been here.
You have one session down, and you only have about 50 more to go to match Charlie, so good luck for that. But thanks for all of your work, and we're going to go now to our notes from the field. And Maureen, let's start with you.
No, I talked to Kelly Cassidy, and at the end of our interview, she told me that she was still dazed from the craziness of the session, and she forgot the word repeal. And a few days later, she didn't know what to say when somebody said, thanks for joining us.
She couldn't remember her name, right?
Right.
All right, Brian?
We've talked before on this program about the new Chicago mayor, Lori Lightfoot. She had her second big city council meeting. The Chicago mayor sort of presides over that meeting. And there's a sort of a public comment section, if you will, where people get up, and often the politicians would kind of ignore people as they made their little brief speeches and complaints about city government. But Mayor Lightfoot has been engaging with people, which has surprised a lot of observers up there. And there was, based on reporting in Politico this week, there was a testy exchange when an official with the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police Union went up there and asked the mayor why the union wasn't included on her transition effort. And said, you know, she would have difficulty achieving her goals. And as she has often done with these people who are publicly commenting and challenging her, she says, hey, if the police union wants to do something other than, quote, obstruct and object to reform, I'd be more than willing to meet with you. So taking an active approach to her management of the city council as she's doing with the city, and not afraid to punch back when somebody goes after her.
Charlie?
Well, we've talked about all the huge issues, and Dana alluded to them, that we saw this legislative session. Another significant issue that really hasn't got a lot of attention is that the legislature has passed, and the governor is expected to sign, a law that will require tougher rules on toxic coal ash sites. Now, Illinois has more coal ash ponds, which is the residue from burning coal to generate electricity, than any other state. Several dozen of them that are closed, and the concern is that they contain very harmful materials, things like arsenic, lead, and that they can leach out into the groundwater. And this law will require companies to do cleanup and put in place plans for closing these in the future, and it also assesses fees so that the cost of cleaning up this environmental threat will be borne not by taxpayers, but by the industry. And I think it's become more of a concern as we've seen this recent flooding, which has jeopardized the integrity of some of these storage ponds for this very toxic material.
And Dana?
The trial started Monday for the man accused of kidnapping, raping, and murdering U of I visiting scholar Yingying Zhang. There's been some interesting turns already. The man, Brent Christensen, is pleading not guilty, but in their opening statements, his defense attorneys said he did it. The prosecutors also entered some wiretap tape that his ex-girlfriend retrieved for them, in which he said that he's murdered 12 other women. There's no evidence to substantiate that yet, but something to watch. Another interesting thing about this case is that it's the first death penalty trial in Illinois since the state abolished the practice in 2011. That's something that's been a little confounding to jurors and also the activists that really pushed to get death penalty off the books in Illinois. But because it is a federal trial, the federal government could put him to death if he's found guilty.
Okay, that will wrap up this week's State Week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Maureen McKinney, and Dana Vollmer. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org, and the production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.